Sky has rated the following film as 15, suitable for viewers aged 15 and over.
British Sky Broadcasting, Universal, Columbia and Ghost House Pictures present The Grudge 2. Starring Sarah Michelle Gellar as Karen, Amber Tamblyn as Audrey, Ariel Keble as Allison, Edison Chen as Eason, and Jennifer Beals as Trish. Directed by Takashi Shimizu. Audio described by Therese Birch on behalf of MCS Agency. The Columbia Pictures symbol, a woman holding a torch aloft, grows long dark hair and her torch flickers and goes out. An ornate door handle, a close-up of a keyhole, a skull appears looking through it. When someone dies in the grip of a powerful rage, a curse is born. The curse gathers in that place of death. Those who encounter it will be consumed by its fury. Modern-day Chicago. Bare trees in front of a plain apartment block. Inside, kidneys are frying in a pan.
You're gonna burn him.
A disgruntled man, Bill, sits at a table. The woman cooking the kidneys, Trish, carries the frying pan to the table and dishes up.
Gonna go shopping for 3 hours again today? Leave your cell phone off? You think I don't know what you're doing? You think I'm stupid, huh? And yet, you can't make me a simple, damn breakfast.
She pours oil from the pan over his head, then smashes it down on him. He lies twitching on the floor. She stares at him expressionless, her head on one side. She sits at the table, putting down the frying pan and grips a mug of coffee with both hands. Her face is pale, her black hair lank. She takes a sip. Blood from Bill's head spreads across the floor. He lies motionless, eyes open. Spots of blood spatter onto a cream background. On top of the blood spots, a black Japanese character appears. Black hair shoots out from the character. It disappears. Strands of hair flow in red fluid. A black and white flashback, a Japanese house. A man with a beard chews his fingers as he reads a Japanese book. A young woman, Kayako, stands in the doorway. The man looks at her malevolently and drops the book. Fist raised, he approaches her. Bottles on a shelf, a bookcase, a picture of a distorted face pinned to the wall. With a horrified expression, Kayako turns and tries to run. The man throws her to the floor. He stretches his neck. She looks up at him. Tries to crawl away. He reaches out and grabs her hair. A little boy watches through the banisters upstairs as the man grips Kayako's head with one hand under her chin, about to break her neck. The man looks up at the child, wide-eyed with horror. He holds the child's head underwater in the bath. He picks up a cat by the scruff of its neck and hurls it against the bathroom wall. Kayako's face is half covered by a plastic sheet, her eyes open. The boy's body is in the attic. International High School, Tokyo, Japan. The reflection of three schoolgirls in a pond.
Yuki! Wait up!
Sorry, I dropped my phone.
God, Allison, you're such a klutz.
I saw you in the cafeteria today. Do you always eat alone?
Well, I had to...
She's only been in Tokyo for like 3 weeks or something.
No, actually, I've been at your school for like 6 months.
Oh, you have?
Well, no wonder you wear your uniform like that.
Like what?
Smiling at Mayuki, blonde Vanessa unbuttons Allison's blazer and points to her skirt.
Roll it up. You look cooler.
Allison looks sideways nervously, then rolls up the hem.
No. Here.
Vanessa points to the waistband.
Higher.
Allison hoists up her skirt with a worried expression.
That's better. You should show off your legs more. They're not bad.
Thanks.
Allison chases after Vanessa and Mayuki as they walk out of the school grounds.
You know, you should eat with us sometime.
Really?
Oh, that'd be great.
Let us check our calendar and get back to you.
They walk away from Allison.
So where are we going anyway?
The skyline of Tokyo. The three girls in their short skirts and white socks walk on a leaf-strewn pavement. Allison looks nervous as they reach a hedge. Beyond it, the dilapidated house where the murders took place. The three girls stand at the gate. Allison looks around apprehensively and hangs back.
What is this place?
Vanessa takes her hand.
Come on, Allison.
She pulls her up to the gate. Creepers climb up the wall.
This is it.
Allison stares at the house.
Can you feel it?
Allison glances sideways at Vanessa.
What do you mean?
They say this is one of the most haunted houses in all of Japan.
Yeah. And that anyone who goes inside gets the curse.
Wide-eyed, Allison looks at Vanessa, then back at the dingy, deserted house. Vanessa pushes open the gates and looks back at Allison. Mayuki pushes Allison through the gates.
Come on.
The three girls look up at the house as they walk slowly towards the door. Vanessa opens the door and looks inside. She steps in, wiping cobwebs from her hair. Mayuki and Allison follow, holding tightly onto their school bags. They creep into the dark hall, looking around, gazing up at the stairs and landing. Vanessa looks down at the blackened floor.
This is where the girl from the International College killed her boyfriend 2 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. She was the one who started the fire that killed him.
Vanessa walks over the charred floorboards.
Maybe they came here to... you know.
What, Miyuki? Get it on?
Yeah.
Well, maybe you should bring Michael down here. Since you two are so... adventurous. Upstairs.
Vanessa leads Allison upstairs. Mayuki looks put out. She goes to follow, but hesitates at the foot of the stairs. She looks over her shoulder at the smoke-blackened room and a single chair. She slowly walks through the dark house. Startled, she turns and opens a door in front of her. It's the bathroom. She grips the side of the door, her fingernails are long and painted silver. She pushes it open and stares at the black bath containing murky water full of leaves. She looks nervous. The water starts to bubble. She backs into the hall to the foot of the stairs.
Come on, she's like totally freaked out. Maybe we should just leave.
What? Oh, so she's your friend now.
No, that's not it.
Mayuki follows Vanessa up the stairs where Allison is holding her blazer.
Thanks.
With a sneer, Vanessa grabs her coat and leads the others across the dark landing. She focuses on a closed door. The three girls creep towards it. Vanessa goes in, followed by Allison and Mayuki. They look around apprehensively and stand in front of some sliding doors. Vanessa looks at the cupboard.
It's in there. Way up to the attic. Where she lives.
What are you talking about?
Kayako. The woman who was murdered here.
What?
Yeah. He killed her. He snapped her neck. And drowned her son in the tub.
He was so sick. He even killed a kid's cat. Before he hung himself.
But before he offed himself? He wrapped up his wife's body in plastic.
Vanessa slides open the door.
And stuffed her in the attic.
Vanessa looks inside, then back at Allison.
No way! I'm not going up there.
You don't have to go up. Just inside. If you close your eyes and count to 10. When you open them again, you'll see her. All the other girls have been too afraid to try. Only me and Miyuki have been able to do it so far.
Allison looks doubtfully at Vanessa and Mayuki on either side of her, then slowly moves forward with an anguished expression. She looks inside the cupboard, then turns to face her companions. She backs into the cupboard, standing just inside.
One, two, three.
You have to go further in.
Allison smiles nervously and steps back. Her hand briefly rests on a journal full of handwriting. Through a tear in the page, a drawing of an eye. Allison stares at it, frowning.
You have to close your eyes before you start counting.
She shuts her eyes.
One, two, three, four.
Hey! Come on, you guys, open the door!
Sorry, Allison!
Open the door, please!
Wait, I gotta...
Please!
Come on, you guys, this isn't funny! I can't open it!
Okay, scaredy cat. Come on out.
Please! Please! You guys! Please, let me out!
Vanessa holds up her camera phone. Mayuki tries to open the door.
I can't open it.
Vanessa tries to slide the door open, but fails.
Hey, Allison. Very funny. We're not holding the door. You should be able to open it.
Allison tries to force the door. In the cupboard, the face of the murdered little boy screaming. Vanessa and Mayuki look at each other, concerned. They look up at the blackened ceiling. Allison sits in the cupboard, looking around, terrified. Vanessa and Mayuki turn round as they gaze upwards. In the dark cupboard, transfixed, Allison stares at the ceiling. Above her, a grey face appears out of the gloom. Vanessa and Mayuki run for it. Allison bursts out of the cupboard and runs downstairs and out of the front door. Pasadena, California. A lawn sprinkler. Two little girls play on the grass verge of a suburban residential street. A car approaches and pulls up opposite an imposing house with a white picket fence. A girl with long brown hair, Audrey, gets out and crosses the road to the house. Family photos on a dresser. There are pictures of a blonde woman with two girls. Audrey lets herself in the front door and walks through the house uncertainly. She pauses at the bedside of the blonde woman, her mother, who lies on her side clutching a handkerchief and looking ill.
Hey, Mum. How are you feeling?
What took you so long?
Audrey takes off her shoulder bag and sits on the chair next to the bed. Her mother looks away.
What's going on?
Her mother turns to face her.
Your sister's in the hospital.
Audrey's mother clasps an oxygen mask to her face.
There's been an accident.
Wait, in Tokyo? What kind of an accident?
There was a fire. They think she started it.
What?
And Doug is dead. I booked a flight. It leaves early tomorrow morning.
No. No, Mom, you can't fly. You're too sick.
I'm not going. You are.
Audrey, mouth agape, struggles to find the words to reply. She looks down, frowning.
No, I can't.
You see, that's the difference between you and Karen. She knows how to face life. I don't care that you girls aren't speaking. She's your sister. Believe me, I wish there was someone else, but there isn't. Bring her back.
Audrey is in a cab driving into Tokyo on a grey, overcast day. The sky is heavy over the buildings of the city. It's dark. The cab pulls up outside a hospital. Audrey gets out of a lift, looking around. She walks along a corridor. She approaches two nurses behind a desk.
Do you speak English? I'm looking for my sister, Karen Davis.
At the other end of the desk, a young Japanese man, Eason, overhears and, looking curious, joins Audrey to interpret.
すいません.
I...
あの、 彼女は Karen Davis の 妹だそうです.
妹さん?
案内してあげてください.
わかりました. ありがとうございます. じゃあ私がお願いします.
She's here. Don't take it to her.
Thank you. どうぞこちらへ.
A nurse leads Audrey and Eason to Karen's room. A policeman stands on guard.
こちらです.
Audrey presents her passport to the policeman, then enters her sister's room. The door slides shut behind her as she approaches the bed uncertainly.
Karen?
Karen lies with her back to Audrey.
Karen.
She slowly turns, frowning, and sits up. Looking confused, she stands up and touches Audrey's arm.
You're here. You're really here. Thank God you're here.
They embrace, then sit down.
do?
You need to help me. You need to get me out of here. You need to get me out of here now.
Whoa, slow down. Just stop for a second. Tell me what happened. Did you start that fire?
Aubrey, you have to get me out of here.
Karen, okay? You're scaring me. Stop.
Please, listen to me. I'm the only person that can stop her.
Who? Stop who?
I have to go back, Karen. Do I have to?
Please, my only chance.
Two men in white coats rush in and strap her to the bed.
Karen, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
The policeman ushers Audrey out of the room as Karen watches helplessly. A nurse switches off the light.
Don't go in that house.
The skyscrapers of Chicago, Illinois. A side street. Bill and Trish unload a van outside their apartment block.
All right.
If I can carry something else.
Yeah, one more?
Yeah. Okay, no problem.
You sure? All right. Can you carry this one?
No. I could, actually.
Yeah, you could, I know you could. Excuse me.
There we go.
All right, kids are upstairs.
They go in with their bags.
I'm nervous.
I know, it's gonna be great.
Yeah.
Actually, I do need to get off. Finances in order, huh? Oh, hey, guys! Want you to meet Trish. This is John and Annie Fleming.
Hey, that's right. Today's a big day. I almost forgot.
It's great to finally meet you. You know, Bill's told us so many nice things about you.
Yes, he has. Mm-hmm. And Annie and I were wondering if maybe you'd like to go for dinner this week.
Bill's daughter, Lacey.
Come on, Jake!
She opens the door.
Welcome to your new home.
Hey!
Bill and Trish go in.
Oh, okay, well, that's everything. Why don't you help me take this stuff back to the bedroom, okay?
Okay, Sally's coming to help. I promise her pizza.
Pizza? Pizza. All right.
Trish unwraps a mirror. In it, she sees the reflection of Bill's sulky little boy watching her.
Hey.
He ignores her.
Jake, come here, please. I want you to get some of this stuff out of the closet, all right? Put it under your bed. Make some room for Trish's coats, all right? Here you go. Here you go. Take this. And this. How about this? There we go. Very good. Go, go, go. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Bill smiles as Jake, laden, goes back to his room.
You okay?
Yeah, she's not sure that he is.
He's gonna be okay. Just give him time.
Trish,
this is Sally.
Sally.
Oh, hey.
Thanks for helping.
No sweat.
I hope you're hungry. I'm going to be ordering from Tefano's.
Tell him to send Billy. He's totally hot. Nice meeting you.
Yeah, nice meeting you.
Trish is unpacking.
I'm really glad you're finally moving in.
Thanks.
Trish embraces Lacey.
That'll be easier for me to borrow your clothes.
Trish's smile fades as she watches Jake struggling to carry his hockey stick and baseball bat to his room. He leans them against the wall, then sits on his bed, shoving his shoes underneath. Trish stands in the doorway, watching.
Jake.
He looks up. She smiles.
Would you knock first?
Oh, sorry.
She steps into the room.
I'm sorry about the closet.
He gets up and shuts his cupboard door.
It's okay. Especially anyway.
He sits down on the bed and glances up at her. She sits beside him. He moves away from her.
I know this must be really hard for you, Jake. I mean, it's a really big change. And I just want you to know that if you ever want to talk about anything, I would really like that.
I'm not going to call you Mom. Okay?
Good. Because I don't really want you to. Trish works just fine for me. Deal?
Okay.
They shake hands. Nighttime. Jake, in his blue and yellow pajamas, comes out of his room into the dimly lit hall. He hesitates, then turns and heads for the front door, tiptoeing. He stops and looks over his shoulder, then continues to the door. He undoes the locks, opens the door, and peers out. He watches the Flemings come down the corridor, supporting a tall figure between them in a hoodie, face hidden. Jake peeps through a crack in the door as the hooded figure is helped along.
Hi, Mr. Fleming.
The Flemings glance back at Jake. He watches them enter their apartment. He ducks back inside the door. The murdered boy crouches naked beside the front door. Audrey, looking troubled, sits in a waiting area at the hospital. Eason approaches her.
Is she okay?
He sits down beside her.
I don't really know.
She fiddles with her bag.
Look, I really need to talk to her.
Are you a friend of hers or something?
He shakes his head.
No. I don't know her. I'm a journalist. My name's Eason.
He holds out his hand. Frowning, she ignores it.
I don't think she can talk to you right now. The doctors told me they're going to sedate her. She can't have any visitors until tomorrow.
He watches her stand up and leave. Breathing heavily, Karen lies strapped to her bed. She's startled by flickering light. She shuts her eyes, about to cry. The light flashes on and off. She frowns. She fights to free herself from the straps as the light turns on and off. As the room is plunged into darkness, she struggles and manages to release her wrists from the bindings. She pulls off the strap across her chest and jumps out of bed. She looks out of the door, at the policemen and doctors in the corridor. They hurry towards the room. They slide open the door. She pushes past and runs down the corridor. Turning a corner, she stops in her tracks, confronted by a group of hospital staff. She stares at them wild-eyed, then runs away, looking over her shoulder at them. Two policemen almost collide with the group. Karen runs along another corridor, turning as she meets a dead end. She stops and watches horrified as the corridor lights flicker and go out one by one. The ghost of Kayoko, in a white shift with long black hair, her head bent over, comes towards her. She flattens herself against the wall, terrified. There is a fire exit behind her. She turns and rushes through it, just as the spectre reaches her. Karen pushes her way through plastic drapes in a storeroom and finds herself surrounded by large, shiny silver ventilation pipes. Clutching her hands to her chest, she hesitates, looking around. She goes through a door, then tries another one. Her hair is blown by a gust of wind. She stumbles forward, then stops. She strides towards a grey door and goes through it. She's startled as it shuts behind her. She backs away. She shivers in her blue dressing gown, realizing she's on the hospital roof. She backs away from the door, looking over her shoulder. Large floodlights line the edge of the roof. Startled by a noise, she sits suddenly. Kayako is approaching her. Looking desperate, Karen glances over her shoulder at the edge of the roof. Kayako has disappeared. She shuts her eyes with relief, holding a hand to her head. hand appears on her cheek. Audrey leaves the hospital.
Excuse me. I just want to talk to you about...
She walks away. Eason follows.
Wait. I just want to talk to you about your sister and the house dish.
He looks up. Mouth gaping, Audrey sinks to the ground. Karen has jumped from the roof, landing in front of her, eyes wide open. Eason looks horrified. Kayako embraces Karen's body from behind. Eason backs away. A pool of blood forms around Karen's head. Eason stares, mouth open. Audrey holds a hand to her mouth. A teacher at a blackboard.
You can see how the shape of these characters reflect their meanings. This is the character Key.
In the class, Allison looks distracted.
In English, it's tree. If you add another tree to it, it becomes hayashi. In English, it means wood. If you add another key to it, it becomes forest. Does anybody know how to read this kanji?
Allison flinches as a black cat brushes her leg. She looks under her desk. The murdered boy crouches at her feet. Allison leaps up. Her classmates stare at her. She looks at the desk, puzzled.
Sorry.
She retrieves her chair and sits down again, frowning uneasily.
Now, what does this look like? Okay, I'll give you a clue.
The cat pads under Mayuki's chair. Allison watches her jump. Mayuki checks under her desk, then looks back at Allison.
Even with my awful writing, I'm not a drawer. But I think you can see that it's a gate. And it's structured by two doors. And the interesting thing is that if you put a kanuki...
Allison is in the locker room in shorts and a t-shirt, clutching a towel. She reluctantly passes a group of girls, including Vanessa, in bra and pants.
Hey, Allison. Are you feeling okay, sweetie? Because, you know, I've been really worried about you. I heard you went to see the school shrink this morning. Oh, poor thing.
Allison goes to the showers. Vanessa picks up a towel and wraps it round herself. She pushes back her hair and heads for the showers. Beneath short curtains, the legs of the girls already in the shower cubicles. Vanessa is in a cubicle behind a yellow curtain, washing her long blonde hair. She shuts her eyes under the flow of water and turns around, rinsing her hair, squeezing it with both hands. She turns back and faces the curtain, looking down at her feet. There are strands of long black hair over them. She looks at her hands, which have more black hair over them. She pulls it off, horrified. She checks her hair, tugging at it to see if it's coming out. The black hair on the shower floor floats towards the drain. Wrapped in a towel, Vanessa slowly returns to the empty locker room. She checks her hair in a mirror. She walks over to her locker. She opens the door and pulls out a white shirt on a hanger. She nervously looks over at a dark corner of the locker room. She puts the hanger back and starts unbuttoning the shirt. She notices a white shift on a hanger fluttering next to a cupboard. She stares at it. There are legs beneath the shift. It's Kayako. Vanessa freezes with terror and urinates. Kayako advances. Vanessa backs away, mouth open. She runs away. The shift is back, hanging next to the cupboard in the empty locker room. The neon lights of Tokyo at night. The streets are thronging with people. Mayuki sits on a bench. A young man, Mike, approaches her from behind and puts his hands over her eyes.
I'm sorry.
You're late.
I know. I had to close up. Let's go.
They link arms and walk away through the busy streets. They pause outside the Sunset Kiss Hotel, then go in. There are illuminated pictures of the rooms on the wall in reception.
Pick anyone you like.
The couple exchange looks. Mike presses a button next to a picture.
Go with this one.
Mayuki smiles and nods, then looks unsure. The couple enter the room and put on a light. There is a big bed with a mirror behind it. Mayuki smiles and turns to her boyfriend.
I like it.
Good.
Mike takes off his jacket, throws it on a chair, and kisses Mayuki.
Get comfortable, I'll be back.
Mayuki smiles. She takes off her jacket in front of a mirror, looking apprehensive. She takes a clip from her hair and shakes it loose, staring at her reflection. She turns away from the mirror and looks at the purple-covered bed, goes over to it and tosses her jacket down. She sits on the edge of the bed, looking nervous. The reflection of Mike in the shower is in the mirror behind her. She looks up and sighs, then crawls on all fours across the bed to the mirror. She picks up a condom in a packet from the bed and studies it. She looks over at Mike, then puts it down hurriedly. She watches Mike leave the shower and scrambles under the covers, pulling them over her head. She peers over the covers as Mike comes out of the shower, then ducks under again, waiting. The covers are being pulled off the bed. She wriggles underneath.
Stop, Michael! It tickles!
Hi.
She looks up. Mike is still in the shower. She looks down at a lump moving under the bedding and backs up the bed away from it. She slowly lifts the covers, then drops them, staring terrified at the moving mound. She backs up against the mirror at the end of the bed. Kayako appears behind her and, gripping her head, pulls her backwards through the mirror. Fastening a towel around his waist, Mike comes out of the shower, looking around.
Miyuki!
He walks over to the bed and grabs the cover. He looks around, puzzled. He pulls her jacket off the bed and walks across the room. A full moon. Audrey lets herself into Karen's dark, cluttered apartment. She turns on a dim light. She slowly steps up into a living room, wringing her hands. She puts on another light. She surveys the room. Computer on an untidy desk, stool, a window, books on a shelf. She reaches into her coat pocket for her phone, looking distressed. She leans against a dresser and opens the phone, breathing heavily. She puts the phone to her ear. Close to tears, she looks across at a framed photo of Karen with friends. Next to it, a picture of the two sisters with their mother, alongside a photo of the two sisters as children cuddling. Tears roll down Audrey's face. She lowers the phone from her ear as she gazes at the pictures and snaps the phone shut. She sinks to the floor, her face crumpling. She buries her face in her hands, her back against the dresser. Eason, surrounded by newspaper cuttings of the murders, is in his apartment watching a tape.
Let's begin with the first incident, 3 years ago. Your colleagues were the primary investigators on that case?
That's correct.
It's my understanding that these colleagues have since disappeared.
The policeman on the video nods.
They have.
A mother and a child were killed in that house. The husband murdered them. I have questions
this
about...
This didn't happen, as reported in the local papers.
Understood.
Eason runs his hand over his hair.
Recently, an American family died in that house, also under suspicious circumstances.
I cannot get into those details.
So, two incidents, two families died in one house.
The policeman looks over his shoulder. Eason replays it.
So, two incidents, two families died in one house.
Eason replays it, freezes it, and picks up a remote to increase the volume.
I cannot get into those details.
So, two incidents, two families died in one house.
Eason replays it frame by frame. Frowning, he focuses on the window behind the policeman. It darkens. A face appears. The TV screen goes black. Kayako appears in it. Eason looks over his shoulder, then back at the TV. His reflection is there, but not the woman's. The story of the murders on the front page of the Daily News Japan. Audrey, seated on the floor of Karen's apartment, gets up and goes to the door, opening it slowly. It's Eason.
Hello.
Cop said you were the one that pulled my sister out of the fire.
Eason nods solemnly.
I'm sorry about your sister.
Audrey nods. Eason looks down hesitantly.
I know why your sister did what she did.
Eason, in the apartment, picks up the newspaper. Audrey hands him a coffee.
Here.
Thanks.
Karen found all this stuff online. Terrible things happen in that house.
I've been covering this story since I moved to Tokyo 3 years ago.
Karen would have never done something like this. It doesn't make any sense.
Eason rubs his face wearily.
Ever since your sister went inside that house, she felt like someone was there with her. Something watching her. Threatening her.
Audrey shifts uncomfortably.
How do you know that?
Ever since I've been in the house, I've been experiencing the same things.
Audrey looks stunned.
Your sister burned down that house because she thought it would stop. The fire changed something. I think it's getting worse.
Eason stands up. So does Audrey.
Where are you going?
I was hoping you can tell me something I don't already know. But you can't. I'm not even sure what I'm looking for anyways. I've got no choice but to go back to the house.
Well, I'll go with you.
I don't want you to go.
I'm going with you. I'm not leaving here until I find out why my sister is dead.
Nighttime. the Chicago apartment. The gloomy corridor. Disturbed by the noise, Jake wakes up and sits up in bed. A photo falls off the wall. Jake puts his ear to the wall as he sits on his bed. He backs away and gets off the bed. He peers out of the front door. He looks down the shadowy corridor and watches a figure slowly shuffling towards the stairs. Jake creeps downstairs into the dark basement where the figure, in a hooded sweat top, looks agitated. Jake follows, tiptoeing down the staircase. Jake, trying to hide, presses himself against the wall as he tails the figure through a door and into another dark room. He tiptoes, looks around, and hides behind a corner. He watches the hooded figure rummaging through dustbins. The figure holds up a page of crumpled newspaper and smooths it out before tossing it to one side. Suddenly the figure straightens up. Jake hides. The figure looks over in his direction. Jake crouches in the shadows, wide-eyed with fear. The figure approaches slowly, clutching a pile of newspapers. Jake watches as it nears him and stops. He freezes. It turns and walks away, its shiny white shoes visible beneath trousers. Jake closes his eyes in relief. He looks up and sees a girl's legs wearing white ankle socks, walking, followed by legs in long white socks. He watches the figure walking away. Jake creeps out of the shadows, head on one side. Daytime. The road outside the apartment. Inside, Trish stirs in bed and clasps her hands over her face. She sits up, looking at the empty space next to her.
So it's going to be PB&J or chicken salad?
Last night. You hear it?
Okay, PB&J it is.
Lacey. Didn't you hear it?
She turns away from the cooker and looks at him.
There were sounds. From next door.
Lacey leans in the doorway.
What'd you hear?
I heard the Flemings coming home. They looked really weird.
Weird? How?
Well, yesterday I...
Sorry, you guys. Why didn't you get me up? Morning.
Lacey and Sally leave the apartment building with Jake.
Tonight's house cut, but I'm pretty sure I made it. Oh, you're totally gonna make it. Are you nervous?
No, not really.
You should have tried out.
Oh, please.
Jake hangs back and looks up at the building. There are pages of newspaper plastered over the Flemings' windows. Someone moves behind a gap in the paper, then fills it in with a page. Jake frowns.
Jake! Jake! Come on, hurry up!
Jake follows.
Hello?
Really? No, he never said that to me. I don't know, maybe he left a message on the cell, I'm not sure. See, he wouldn't say that to me. He would just say that to you. Because he likes you, that's why. You don't have to be coy. I know it's important to be professional, but it's, you know, you have to have a life.
Trish senses someone is behind her. She looks nervous. She turns round. It's Bill.
Who are you talking to?
It's just Nate.
She smiles.
Are you okay?
Frowning, he seems confused.
Forgot my keys.
I'll go check the bedroom.
She pats his shoulder and glances at him as she leaves the room. Agitated, he watches her. He squeezes his keys so hard that his hand shakes and bleeds. He looks down and raises his trembling fist, examining the bloody keys, frowning. The gloomy corridor outside the apartment. In Japan, Eason leads Audrey to the haunted house. There is police tape across the gate. They pause outside, looking up at the smoke-stained walls. Eason turns to Audrey.
Wait here.
No, I...
Please, just stay here.
He ducks under the tape and goes through the gate. He enters the dark house, looking around nervously. He pauses at the foot of the stairs, looking up into the darkness. He climbs the stairs to the first floor, where the windows are streaked with soot. He looks around. Startled by the rattling, he goes down a gloomy corridor. There is a window at the end. He jumps, pausing by a sheet of paper taped to the sliding doors. Outside, Audrey swallows nervously as she looks up at the balcony of the first floor of the dilapidated house. Eason hesitates, then tears feverishly at the paper on the door. He pauses and looks at the door. At the gate, Audrey sees a shadowy figure in the doorway. Audrey ducks under the tape and goes through the gate. Eason slides open the door. He steps back, then crouching, peers into the cupboard. He goes in, looking up. The pages of a book in the cupboard flutter and open at the picture of the eye. Eason picks it up. Audrey hesitates at the front door and looks over her shoulder. A hand grabs her arm and wheels her round. There's no one there. Audrey rubs her arm and finds herself in the house.
Audrey! What are you doing in here?
Something pulled me in.
I told you to stay outside.
No.
We have to go. Now.
They leave the house. Audrey glances back. The Tokyo school's headmistress sits in her office looking worried.
Come in. Vanessa, please have a seat.
Vanessa, looking anxious, sits down next to Allison.
Allison has just been telling me an interesting story that I'd like you to verify.
A story about what?
About a visit you made with her and Miyuki Nozawa to a certain house.
I'm sorry, Miss Delvin. I don't know what she told you.
Please, Vanessa. No one is in trouble here. I just need to find out exactly what happened in that house.
Vanessa slowly looks at Allison, who turns towards her, close to tears.
Miyuki is missing.
We just got the call. Apparently, she never came home last night.
She said she was going to be with her boyfriend, Michael.
Yes, we've spoken with him. He said she disappeared. Now you can understand, Vanessa, how important it is that we hear the truth.
Why did you do this to me? Why did you take me to that place?
You wanted to come. What did I ever do to you?
Allison, wait! Wait here.
Allison runs out of the office, followed by the headmistress. Vanessa looks around, stroking her hair. She texts Miyuki. Where are you? She sighs, sitting at the desk. She shuts her phone and leans forward. She idly picks up a pen, then puts it back in its stand. She looks at the desk lamp and switches it on and off, looking dazed. The lamp stays off. Vanessa tries the cord again and gets up to look under the shade. She sits down and tugs at the cord. It won't work. She looks under the desk. The plug is out of the socket. She looks around, then crawls under the desk to replace the plug. The ghostly bare feet of a child run past the desk. Vanessa freezes and starts trembling. It's her phone on the desk. Still crouching underneath, she reaches out to answer it. She touches the white feet of a child. She looks at her hand. The desk starts shaking violently. She scrambles out and backs away, leaning against the windowsill. She looks over at the phone and creeps towards it, hand outstretched.
Miyuki!
She throws down the phone and runs out of the office and through the playground. She nearly collides with a passerby as she rushes out and into a phone box. Taking a coin from her blazer pocket, she hurriedly dials a number.
Miyuki?
Vanessa drops the phone and presses herself against the side of the kiosk. Two ghostly white hands grab her bare legs. She looks down. It's the murdered boy sitting naked at her feet, looking up at her. Black hair creeps over Vanessa's face and snakes between her fingers. Kayako's white face appears behind her. The hair envelops her features. Vanessa's eye is covered by the hair. Eason flicks through the book from the house.
Kayako kept this journal her whole life. She was only 8 when she wrote this part.
Audrey frowns.
Apparently her mother was an Itako.
Itako, what's that?
Eason glances at her.
It's a kind of channeler. People believe they can talk with their deceased loved ones through them. But I don't understand this part. I have a friend. He's really into folklore. I think he can help us.
Audrey watches Eason make a call on his mobile. She gets up and wanders around her sister's apartment. She looks at a framed photo on the wall of Karen and a boyfriend. She looks down at a dressing table and picks up a hair clip. She reaches out and touches the sleeve of a tweed coat hanging nearby.
Aubrey.
Audrey puts the clip down and returns to Eason, who's putting on his jacket.
Good news. He's home. We can see him right now.
Audrey looks around at the apartment with a distracted expression.
You okay?
Yeah. I'm fine.
Eason looks at her, concerned. Smoking, a long-haired man studies the journal by a window. Watched by Audrey and Eason, he puts the journal down on a desk in his cluttered apartment. He reaches up for a book on a high shelf.
He says that what Kayaka wrote was about the rituals her mother performed and how they were somewhat abnormal.
The man hands Eason the open book of photos. Audrey takes the book from Eason.
There's no real word to describe in English, but the closest thing would be exorcist.
The man hands the journal from the house back to Eason, who stares at a childish sketch of a girl with long hair, dark matter spilling from her mouth.
Eason
looks troubled.
It sounds like her mother was able to cure people through extracting evil spirits out of their bodies.
He looks at the sketch.
And feeding them to her daughter.
Eason turns the pages. Audrey places her hand over his on a picture of a rectangular frame. She compares it to a photo of the same frame in the book she's holding. She rubs her arm as they wait at a railway station.
First thing tomorrow morning, we have to go see her.
See who?
Kayako's mother.
Audrey takes a deep breath. Eason sits down next to her.
I tried everything. I even went back to the house.
He rubs his chin.
Look, if she can really take evil spirits out of people, maybe she can help us.
They look at each other.
I don't know what to believe anymore.
Eason looks away, troubled.
We don't have a choice. It's our only hope.
Okay.
They look at each other as a train arrives at their platform. Eason's apartment.
This is the research I was doing for the story. I've got her childhood address.
He leans across his untidy desk.
Right here.
He fetches a map and searches for the location with his finger, turning the map over.
It's a small village.
He grabs a train timetable while Audrey sits on the couch.
The train will only take us halfway. We'll have to switch to a bus.
Leaning over the desk, he looks across the room at Audrey, concerned. She looks back at him, her eyes brimming with tears.
Last time I saw Karen, we got in this huge fight. It was really stupid.
She shakes her head. He straightens up.
She took me out to lunch and she dropped this college application on me and I
concerned, he walks over to the couch and sits down beside her.
I was so pissed.
She turns her head towards Easton.
I thought she was trying to be just like my mother. Screamed at her, told her to stop trying to change my life, to leave me the hell alone.
Audrey shrugs.
She did. We never spoke again until last night. I always blamed Karen for my mother's indifference towards me. I know that wasn't true, and I really regret.
Well, you know, strange. Back in Hong Kong, my brother lived a few blocks away from me for 4 years. We never even tried to see each other.
They look away from each other awkwardly.
Make some tea.
Yeah, thanks.
He gets up and goes over to the sink, putting the light on. Audrey sits back on the couch. Eason turns off the gas under the kettle. He carries two mugs to the couch, but takes them back to the kitchen when he sees Audrey is asleep. He covers her with a blanket. He switches off the Anglepoise lamp near the couch. He enters a dark room, switching on a red light and drawing a curtain across the door. He takes off his jacket. He inspects some photos pegged on a line. His eyes caught by a photo of the haunted house. He studies it, rubbing his fingers across it. He looks at the next one. A black shadow appears in the entrance. He touches the photo. He puts a piece of paper into a developing tray, pushing it down with tongs. He frowns as an image appears. He leans over the tray to study the picture of a black shape standing by the gate.
It's out of the house now.
Startled, he looks around. He looks down at the picture in the tray. The black shape moves. The tray fills with a black, inky fluid. Eason steps back, eyes wide, as Kayako's head rises out of the black liquid, staring at him. She grips the side of the tray with her hands, staring up at him, black circles beneath her eyes, wet hair over her face. She grabs his face. He falls to the floor, crouching as she crawls out of the tray, jerkily stretching out thin, bare arms to crawl towards him, her mouth wide open. Audrey stirs on the couch. She opens her eyes and looks around. She sits up and inspects the blanket, lifting it up. She turns to look at the kitchen.
Eason?
She stands up, wrapping her coat around her, rubbing her hands. She slowly goes over to the bedroom.
Eason?
She checks inside. Frowning, she shivers and walks towards the dark room. She opens the door and pushes back the curtain.
Eason, are you in here?
She looks for the light and switches it on, head on one side, and goes further into the room.
Ethan?
She walks past the red light and up to the photos on the line. She looks down at the tray, then stops to pick up a photo from the floor. Crouching, she studies the photo of the black shape in front of the haunted house. Suddenly she notices Eason, propped up in a corner, eyes and mouth open.
Eason.
She moves towards him.
Eason!
He clamps his arms around her. She pulls back. He turns into Kayako. As she recoils, Eason returns. She backs out of the room. All the photos on the line show Kayako with hair over her face. Nighttime. The Chicago apartment block. Lacey stands outside Sally's door. It opens slowly.
Jeez, you sick or something?
Lacey is wearing a cheerleader's outfit.
So, what do you think?
Perspiring, with lank hair, Sally drinks from a quart container of milk, gulping the contents. Lacey watches, concerned.
Sally, are you okay?
Lacey steps forward but stops in her tracks as Sally looks at her malevolently. She lowers the plastic bottle and regurgitates the milk back into it. Looking disgusted, Lacey answers her phone.
Jake, what's wrong? No, it's okay, I'll be right there.
Lacey backs away from Sally.
Jake, I gotta go.
Sally lifts the bottle of regurgitated milk and drinks it again as Lacey hurries away, glancing back over her shoulder. Lacey enters Jake's bedroom.
Jake?
It's dark. Lacey walks in, looking around. She goes over to the cupboard and slowly opens the door.
Jake?
She looks inside. The wall is covered in family photos. Jake crouches, crying in the corner.
God! Jake, what are you doing in here?
I was scared.
What were you scared of?
Trish. And Dad.
Lacey looks confused.
They're fighting, Lacey.
She glances over her shoulder.
Where are they?
I don't know. I wish Mom was here.
Lacey crawls into the cupboard and cuddles her brother. Jake is in bed. He sits up in response to the knocking. He reaches out and rests his hand on the wall next to the bed. He leaps back, wide-eyed with fear. He opens the front door and looks out at the dimly lit corridor. He creeps down to the Flemings' apartment and pushes open their door, letting himself in.
Mr. Fleming?
The apartment is dark, empty, and very untidy, with bits of paper all over the floor. Jake creeps in, looking around nervously. He goes towards a closed bedroom door. He listens at the door. He reaches for the door handle. He opens the door and sees the hooded figure sitting on the floor, hacking at her hair with a knife, surrounded by crumpled newspaper and blankets. The figure suddenly spots Jake and hugs its knees. The figure backs along the wall into a corner. Jake notices the two windows covered in bits of newspaper. Jake sees eyes through a gap in the newspaper. He gasps and runs away. Lacey stirs in her bed. She sits up and switches on the light. Jake hurtles into her room and jumps into bed with her.
What's wrong, Jake? I'm next door.
Where?
Next door. I saw something in the window. Eyes.
It's okay, Jake. It's okay.
Something's really wrong, Lacey.
Okay, tomorrow. I promise I'll go there with you, okay?
He nods.
Just try and get some sleep now.
Lacey turns off the light. A dark bedroom. There is someone in the bed. On the bedside table, a glass lies on its side, next to milk bottles. Sally, face bathed in perspiration, lies in the bed. She raises her head slightly from the pillow and opens her mouth as if choking. The murdered boy appears next to her. Unshaven, Bill lies in bed. He awakes with a start, frowning. He looks around and sits up, realizing Trish is not beside him. He grabs the clock radio from the bedside table.
Damn it.
He jumps out of bed and enters the living room, looking around. Noticing the table is laid for breakfast, he moves a chair out of his way. He enters the kitchen, looks over his shoulder, and peers into a pan on the stove in which kidneys are frying. The oil spits. Impatiently, he picks up the kettle and opens a cupboard. Trish is in Jake's bedroom, sitting on his bed, listening at the wall with a dazed expression. Scowling, carrying a mug of coffee, Bill comes out of the kitchen and sits at the table. Trish enters and goes to the cooker. He looks over at her angrily.
You got home pretty late last night.
She stands with her back to him.
Where were you?
Come in.
Her white socks wrinkled around her ankles, shirt hanging out, hair unkempt, Alison enters the headmistress's office, looking distraught.
Alison.
The headmistress stands up.
Alison, are you all right?
Alison nods.
Maybe we should go see the nurse.
I want to go home.
The headmistress puts her arm around Alison and guides her to the couch. They sit down.
Take a breath. Tell me what's going on. You can talk to me.
Alison looks at the headmistress tearfully.
It was that house.
The headmistress looks impatient and stands up.
There was something there when I was there.
The headmistress sits opposite Alison, who starts to weep, bowing her head.
I just want to go home.
Alison, listen. I've been to that house with the police. There's nothing there. It's just an abandoned house.
You went there.
The headmistress smiles reassuringly.
Yes, I did.
She's gonna come for you. She got me, Yuki. And Vanessa, And now she's after me.
Allison.
Allison looks down, sobbing.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Allison looks up, puzzled.
What? They're right here.
Allison's eyes dart from one side to the other. She throws herself to the floor as shadowy figures of Vanessa and Mayuki are seated on the couch. Allison watches in horror as the headmistress stands up, face ashen, black rings beneath her eyes, mouth gaping. Allison backs away. A red and white train travels through the Japanese countryside. Audrey looks out of the train window. She stands on the empty platform of a small rural station. She leaves the station and pauses to look in her shoulder bag. She extracts a piece of paper and checks it. She looks around the deserted area. She sits in the back of a bus looking out of the window apprehensively. A couple of seats in front of her, an old man repeatedly covers his face with his hands, then takes them away, focusing on the empty seat next to her. She looks sideways to check it's empty. She turns to look out of the window, unaware of the reflection of the murdered boy sitting next to her. Audrey, clutching the piece of paper, walks along a country lane. An old man tends a small Buddhist shrine at the side of the road. Audrey stops and looks down at the shrine. Glancing from side to side, she sets off again. She climbs a steep, rocky, wooded hillside. The trees are shrouded in mist. She stops and gasps in recognition at the rectangular frame she has seen in the books. She walks down a path and through the frame, which forms an entrance to a clearing in the woods. She stops and stares at a small timber hut. She lets herself into the dark, dilapidated shack.
Hello?
She walks in, slowly looking around at a collection of broken pots and a shelf that runs across a window. She peers through a hole torn in the fabric of a partition. Behind her, something stirs. Audrey is startled by an old woman with long grey hair who sits up on the other side of the room. She tentatively approaches the old lady.
I need to speak to you about your daughter, Kayako.
The old woman turns away.
I saw the journal. I know you can get rid of evil spirits.
She is dead.
You did this. You made her what she was. Now I need you to help me. Help me end this. No, wait.
The old lady grabs Audrey's arm. Flashback, a young couple walk through the gateway and kneel in the shack.
People came looking for me. Full of pain and suffering.
The couple watch a little girl, Kayako, peer out of a cupboard, then kneel before them next to her mother, who puts her finger in the visitor's mouth, scooping out blood with a long fingernail.
I took the dark spirits from them. And so did my daughter.
You poisoned her. Look what she's become.
She drops the blood in Kayako's mouth.
I did not create this evil.
Kayako was killed by her husband because she was foolish. That is where the curse started. I did not make her what she is now.
Audrey walks towards the old lady.
My sister tried to burn down the house where Kayako was killed. She thought if she burned down the house that it would stop.
This is not about a house. You are just making things worse. She wants us to suffer the way she has suffered.
No, we have to make it stop.
No, it will not stop. It will grow and destroy everything it touches. It will spread beyond the house. There can be no end to what has started.
The old lady gazes at Audrey. She frowns and backs away from Audrey. She collapses to the floor, looking terrified. Audrey becomes Kayako in a white shift with long black hair. She approaches her mother, moving her broken neck jerkily. The old woman stares up at her petrified, her eyes open wide as Kayako kneels before her. Mist swirls around the gateway outside the shack. Audrey looks down at the lifeless form of the old lady on the floor. Distraught, she kneels before her. Slowly, she reaches out and touches the old woman's knee. She examines her trembling hand and stands up with a horrified expression. She touches her chest, breathing heavily. She gets up, backs away, then turns and runs. The gloomy corridor of the Chicago apartment block. Lacey and Jake climb the stairs. Jake stops, looking nervous. Lacey glances back at him.
Hey. You okay?
Something bad.
What?
Something bad lives there. That's what's making everything else bad here.
Lacey follows his gaze to the Fleming's door, then puts her arm around him.
Come on, Jake. Let's go.
They stop outside their door, step forward and push it open. Lacey leads the way.
Dad? Trish?
Jake glances nervously at the Fleming's door again. They enter their dark apartment. Lacey tries a light switch. It doesn't work.
Dad?
Lacey goes to the hall cupboard and gets out a torch, switching it on. She shines the beam around the room. It's been trashed. Lamps lie broken. The blinds are drawn. She creeps forward.
Just wait here. Dad? Trish?
Jake shines the torch around nervously. Family photos on the dresser of Audrey's mother's dark room. The curtains are drawn. She sits up in bed and reaches over to switch on a lamp.
Hello.
Hi, Mom, it's me.
I've been waiting for you. Where have you been? How's Karen?
She's gone, Mom. I'm sorry.
She's gone.
As she speaks, Audrey walks along by a grey wall.
I know how much you loved her. I know she was everything to you.
Supposed to bring her back. You could never do anything on your own.
Audrey pauses on the leaf-strewn pavement.
I love you so much. But you can't talk to me like this anymore. This has to end.
Audrey.
Audrey's face crumples.
Audrey.
Love you, Mom. Goodbye.
Audrey looks down, crying, then shuts her eyes and turns her head, looking determined. She is outside the haunted house. She goes through the gate and into the dark house. She looks up at the landing.
My sister is dead. You killed her. Just like you killed the others. You won't stop. Why? What do you want?
Breathing heavily, Audrey watches in amazement as Karen slowly climbs the stairs.
Karen! Karen! Karen, no!
Audrey runs after her. Audrey wipes the tears from her cheeks. Karen goes into a bedroom. Audrey follows. In the Chicago apartment, Jake focuses the torch on a man's shoe and a trail of blood. He follows it down the corridor to his father's bedroom, shining his torch on the cupboard. He trips over. He reaches out for the torch, which is shining on the bare foot of his dead father. On all fours, Jake crawls towards him. He shines the torch on his father's face. There is blood on his forehead. His eyes are open. A ghostly white hand is gripping his arm. Jake backs away, scrambles to his feet, and runs out of the bedroom and into the living room. Jake pushes open the bathroom door. Lacey kneels by the bath, her head underwater.
Lacey! Lacey! No! 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 Lacey! No!
Jake.
Jake pulls her away and props her against the wall. He slowly turns towards the bath and pulls back the shower curtain. Trish is sitting at the other end of the bath.
It's time for your bath.
As Trish smiles, a pair of ghostly, childish hands appear from behind her head and pull her back under the water. Jake gets up and runs out of the apartment, looking around wildly. He sprints towards the stairs. He stops and looks back at the Fleming's door. The hooded figure is at the far end of the corridor. It sinks to the floor. Jake stumbles over to it. The hooded figure straightens up as if scared of Jake. In the Japanese haunted house, Audrey walks through a very bright light. She looks around with tearful eyes. Audrey creeps forward and pushes open a door to reveal the frowning murderer in a check shirt, chewing his fingers, reading the handwritten journal. Flash flashback to his wife, Kayako, entering the room. He drops the journal. Audrey looks down at it. The man slowly turns to look at her with a malevolent expression. The pages of the book turn until the drawing of the eye appears. The sketch becomes a real eye, open wide. Audrey looks down at it with horror. A tear rolls down her cheek. Flashback to the man raising his fists to Kayako, knocking the low overhead light as he approaches her. Kayako turns into Audrey. Audrey runs as he lunges at her. Flashback to him struggling with Kayako. Audrey twists her ankle as she tries to escape the man's grasp. She falls. The man ricochets off the walls, punching them. Flashback to Kayako, wide-eyed with terror, crawling away. He stretches his neck as if to loosen it. Audrey tries to crawl away from him. He stands over her as she reaches the top of the stairs. She looks up at him. Flashback to Kayako crawling downstairs. The man reaches out and grabs Audrey's hair, jerking back her head. He places one hand beneath her chin, just as he had done with Kayako, who looks up at the little boy watching from the top landing. The man breaks Audrey's neck with a twist. Her arm falls down limply. The boy looks down. The man stands over Audrey, then looks up at the little boy, who runs away. The boy backs away as his father grabs him. Audrey lies motionless on her side on the floor. Frowning, she stares at a doorway. A shadowy figure with long black hair opens the mesh door and approaches Audrey, who looks up, blood around her mouth. She turns into Kayako, then back into Audrey. The figure is Allison, who crouches over her.
They say this is one of the most haunted houses in all of Japan.
Yeah. That anyone who goes inside gets the curse.
Jake approaches the hooded figure in the corridor and crouches in front of it.
All the other girls have been too afraid to try. Only me and Miyuki have been able to do it so far.
Flashback to Allison in the cupboard at the haunted house. Jake stares, terrified, as the figure turns towards him, revealing its face. It's Allison, looking disheveled and tearful. She grabs him.
Please, you have to help me.
Flashback to Allison in the cupboard, looking petrified.
He killed her.
He killed her.
He snapped her neck.
If you close your eyes...
Count to ten.
When you open them again,
you'll see her.
Jake leans forward.
It's all your fault! What did you do? What did you bring here?
It followed me here. They followed me here.
Allison turns as Kayako crawls on the stairs. When Jake looks, there's no one there. Jake stares at Allison. His eyes widen. He backs away. Allison looks down. Her face trembles. Her cheeks are tear-stained. Two ghostly white hands appear out of the hood she's wearing and drag her backwards into it. The empty hooded top falls to the floor. Jake stares mesmerized at the empty sweat top, then reaches out to touch it. He picks it up and holds it at arm's length. Ghostly hands appear from the sleeves and grip his arms. Covered in strands of black hair, Kayako's face appears very close to Jake, eyes wide and staring. The end.